Hey everyone, welcome to Seen That, the podcast where we talk about cult and classic movies we haven't seen until now. In this week's episode, we're discussing WALL-E and why Avril,
hey everyone,
hasn't seen that and much more. Hope you guys enjoy.
Well, thank you again to our lovely guest last week, my godfather, Roger. That was such a fun episode.
That was really fun episode. He had such great insights. I feel like we're definitely going to have him back for which movie we're not sure yet, but he'll be a recurring guest for sure.
We'll drag him back in to see that.
Yeah. Once he thought he was out of this podcast, we're going to drag him back in. Had to do one more of those.
Exactly. Yeah. Never gets old.
No.
Also, we are wrapping up almost on our second season.
I know. This was a longer season. We decided for our second season to do 12 episodes. So next time you guys hear us, it will be our final episode of the season.
Season two finale.
Yeah. We are still working out the details of how long we're going to take a break for and all of that, and maybe we do some sort of shorter, like, spring-summer series. But, yeah, I think we are excited that we did this season, but also, like, a little happy that, to have a break as things start to open up again. And, you know, we see the light at the end of the tunnel a little bit with this pandemic, at least for whatever the new normal is. So it'll be just nice to enjoy some time. I mean, it's funny that a vacation now is just like not doing the podcast and not going to the beach or not doing anything else. But it's bittersweet, but we'll obviously be back and we'll have more details for you guys when we have discussed them.
I like to think of this past season as a semester of school. Mm-hmm. So we're wrapping up our, you know, spring 2021, Seen That semester, basically.
Yeah, we're in our final, this is our finals. We're, you know, schedules changed, everything's getting busier. Mm-hmm. We have like a little bit of senioritis, so that's like the vibe. But we're still like super excited to record every week. So, but whatever will come is going to be great and really fun. And we literally, from every single episode, I feel like we've come up with a new movie that one of us hasn't seen. So, I mean, we definitely have more movies to talk about.
So much content.
That is super exciting. Yes. So much content.
So much content. I feel like last episode we discovered several films between the two of us that we hadn't seen. So
yeah.
There's so much out there we still need to watch and talk about.
And yeah, I guess with that, this leads me into the movie for this week. We are talking about WALL-E. It was released June 27th, 2008, and it had a budget of $180 million, like estimated. And it's Pixar. It, you know, was beautifully animated, so you know they spent a lot on the animation and the development. It took them years and years and years.
Making humans look fat, that takes time and money. Yeah.
So $180 million, and it grossed over $223 million in the United States alone. So did pretty well. Did pretty fantastic. The director was Andrew Stanton. He was the writer, creative on this, and also on many other Pixar films, basically all of the Toy Story films, Finding Nemo, Finding Dory, Monsters, Inc., and that sequel, and so many others. So Andrew Stanton was the director and also writer of this film. And fellow writers also include Pete Docter. And he has also had many hits with the Disney Pixar universe. He worked on Up, Inside Out, Soul, and Monsters, Inc. And then another writer, Jim Reardon, who's done Zootopia and Wreck-It Ralph. So they're all in good company. Obviously, this had the makings of a good film just from the writer and director's list alone. And it stars Ben Burtt as WALL-E, and he is a prolific voice actor on a lot of things. And you guys might not recognize his name, but he, if you've seen any Star Wars thing, like if you've seen Clone Wars, if you've done a Star Wars video game, he's been in a part of it. I can probably guarantee you. He's credited as coming up with the sound and voice of Chewbacca, Yoda, R2, like all of these things, creating the sound design for all of that stuff. And he does a lot of those sort of, you know, robot personalities. So you definitely know who Ben. Yeah. So I thought it was funny when we were talking about in our Force Awakens episode, like R2 versus BB-8, that he was definitely heavily a part of all of that. So cool to that he's sort of back for our WALL-E episode. And Alyssa Knight, the next star on the list, plays Eve and is also a great voice actress and heavily featured in Pixar films like Cars and I think A Bug's Life and things like that. And then the next one on the list of, I guess, top stars in the movie, Jeff Garland, who plays the captain, who you may know from Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Fred Willard, who plays the character Shelby Forthright, which I didn't know this character's name, but he's basically the CEO of, by and large, you see him, you know, with the flags kind of at a presidential like podium a lot of the time. So we'll get into, you know, details of him and all of that. But
R.I.P. He passed recently.
Oh, really? I don't. Yeah. Oh, my God. He was in so many things.
Yeah. Best in Show, Spinal Tap. He was a part of the whole like Christopher Guest and Eugene Levy. Catherine O'Hare, like that whole troupe of actors and those movies.
Oh my gosh. They're all fantastic. Wow. Yeah. And also not really a star, but I felt like we needed to bring this one up because obviously she is featured in our Alien episode. Sigourney Weaver is like the voice of like
yes, the I ship. Thought so. That's okay. I was like, yeah. Wait, this sounds familiar. So many like throwbacks to our movies we've done this season alone.
That's why I did a long sort of intro on the stars and everything, just because I was like, all of this connects. So I felt like I needed to go in a little bit more detail with this. And you can stream this on pretty much anywhere, but I watch it on Disney Plus. If you're paying for Disney Plus, don't pay for it on anywhere else because they have it for free. So just a quick summary. In the not-so-distant future, when our planet is uninhabitable and covered by trash, WALL-E, a trash-compacting robot, and Eve, a drone tasked with finding signs of life on Earth, must work together against corrupt space artificial intelligence and help humanity return home. Okay, getting into it. So, I've known you to be a huge lover of Pixar films, particularly Toy Story, and also Brave, and so many others. But
Morty,
I gotta watch that. Oh my! Have you ever seen
Brave?
No, I have seen Brave. Sorry, correction. I have seen Brave. I think I've only seen it once, but So this film is also 13 years old. And has won numerous awards. It won for Best Animated Feature Film at the Oscars. Funnily enough, the same year that Milk was nominated and won.
That's right.
Yeah. So I, of course, again, it all connects.
It does.
So I just find that funny that we were talking about that award show and all the movies that distracted us from Milk. And yet here we are talking about WALL-E. So, and it also holds, you know, a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. All this to say, Avril, why hadn't you seen that?
I'm not proud of this answer, but it's an honest one. Growing up, learning about climate change and global warming scared the shit out of me. And it still scares me. However, when I was younger, I just didn't want to learn more about it. I was so terrified. I didn't want to watch films about it. I didn't want to read articles about it. I just felt very scared and wanted to be in the dark. And this movie, from all that I had heard and the little I had seen in the trailer and just in clips here and there, knew that it displayed America. It displayed Earth as a wasteland, inhabitable and filled with trash. And all the humans are on a spaceship and fat and they don't move. And so it just seemed really dark for a Pixar film. And, you know, being what we were 13 when this comes out, mm-hmm. I was just terrified that that could actually become our future. And so mm-hmm. I didn't want to watch it for that reason. So I actively avoided it, which wow. I'm not, again, proud to say that because I love Pixar. They always produce and make great films. And as I will explain later on, I think this is one of those films. It you know, fits the bill. But yeah, it seemed more of a dire warning than a fun kid movie. And for that, I didn't want to watch it. And then, you know, as I got older, I was just like, oh, whatever. That kind of fear I had, you know, I'm still scared of what's going to happen to our planet. That doesn't go away. Yeah. But as you get older, I would hope other people feel this way too. You know, take that fear and turn it into action, turn it into, you know, educating yourself to learn more about the things you can do to make the world better and to try to stop or at least prevent future natural disasters and, you know, try to make a change. So I feel that way now. And so as I got older, I didn't really associate this movie with that anymore. And it was just, oh, I'll watch it at some point. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, as I think we've said in a lot of these episodes, that doesn't always happen. You'd like You're think, right. oh, I'll just watch it with some friends, or, oh, it'll be on TV and I'll just watch it. And like somehow, some way that doesn't happen.
Right.
So that is why I hadn't seen it until now.
Yeah. And you kind of mentioned, I guess, a little bit, you knew some of it, which is why you were scared. But mm-hmm. did any of what you knew hold true to what was actually in the film? I'm curious if there's anything else you knew before going into this. And
I knew that there was that, that there basically is also a love story at the center of this movie.
Okay, you knew that. Okay.
I knew that. And just, again, like as a younger person was just like, oh, whatever. I didn't care about that at all. I was more like afraid of like how it was going to make me feel and like the state of our Earth, the state of things in the world.
Okay. So you did know a lot, but also somewhat very little. Like you didn't know a lot of details, but just broad strokes.
Yes. Yes. You're right. That's exactly it. I mean, the movie wasn't spoiled for me because there's a lot, which I'm sure we'll talk about, that I didn't know that I was pleasantly surprised by.
Mm-hmm.
But the, you know, gist of it was for me, world is desolate and been, you know, literally left to rot by humans. Everybody's gotten fat and is on a ship. And there's this robot that compacts trash and falls in love with another robot that's there to... I didn't even know what the other robot was there for. I didn't even know the robot's name until I watched the movie.
Yeah.
So I'm not, again, I don't feel good saying that as to why I hadn't watched it. I think this is maybe one of the first films, maybe besides The Exorcist and a few others that I can't think of at the moment, where I actively avoided
it. Right. Yeah.
But I am very glad I've seen it now. And climate change is real. Global warming is real.
Yeah.
The little that I knew, I was like, oh, that's enough. I don't, you know, that's just probably going to upset me. So I'd rather watch something else like Toy Story 2, which is a great movie.
I don't like Toy Story 2 that much. I know that's a really hot take, but.
It is.
It's, we'll talk offline about it one day. Yeah. But there are reasons. I'm not saying it's like bad. I'm just saying out of the four, it's not the best one.
You know what is nuts? I have not seen the fourth Toy Story movie.
Okay. Yeah, because it kind of came out like almost randomly and I almost was avoiding that because I was like, oh, how good could it be?
Mm.
Cried both times.
Oh, I'm going to wail.
I mean, it's great.
I'm going to be a puddle.
Yeah, I had low expectations, though, so I don't know, you know, don't expect it to be a Toy Story 1, but it's pretty good, I have to say. It's pretty good. Anyway, getting back to Wally.
I think it's okay if we talk about other Pixar films.
Oh, of course. Just because we've also seen probably so all the Pixar films, that this might be our only shot to talk about them on air.
It would not be good if we kept being like, but Michael Corleone.
Oh my God. Everyone's probably like, get rid of the Godfather bits already. Oh my God. Never gets old.
Never.
Okay, so now that you've seen it, I was really curious more with this movie, more than any other movie I think we've done, about what you thought of it. Because I was like, again, knowing your history with Pixar films, I'm just like, how is she gonna react? I don't know. So like, I'm curious what your thoughts were.
I hated this movie. No, not at all. Further, I couldn't be further from the truth. I really, really liked it. I hold off on saying I loved it. Just again, going back to our last episode, I've seen so many other Pixar films earlier in my life that those are sort of cemented in my mind as my favorites. Maybe on rewatch, or like the 50th time I see this film, I'll be like, you know what? I actually do love this, and this is up there for me. But right now, I really, really liked it, and I very much enjoyed watching it. Again, I'm really glad I've seen it, but this is not my favorite Pixar film.
Right. Yeah. I don't think it's my favorite, but well, I do want to, I'll float this in later, but just keep in the back of your mind, I do want to ask where maybe this ranks. Maybe we should answer this now. I want to do ask where it ranks in terms of your favorite Pixar films, but maybe we answer that once you've, you know, kind of explain your thoughts on this, and then we can like dive into like rankings of Pixar films. I thought that might be fun.
I should have thought of that. I mean,
we could do like a general ranking. Yeah, it's not like, you know, but again, I don't know of any other, unless they come out with a new one again, I don't know of any major Pixar films that either that one of us hasn't seen. So this might be our only chance.
I haven't seen Cars.
Okay. Yeah, but it's not worth doing on the podcast. Like, it's fine, but Cars is not even as good as WALL-E, so.
That's what I hear. In my opinion. Cars is only okay.
Cars is all right.
Yeah. Sorry to Cars stands.
Sorry, Cars, yeah.
Probably my favorite thing about this film is the love story between WALL-E and Ava. Is it Eva or Ava?
I think it's just Eve, but the way he says it is like Eva. Like, it's really like, I'm like, is there an A? But there's not. It's Eve.
I did think that was really cute, and I did like that aspect of the film, but it was not my favorite. I think my favorite part of the movie is how much of what we've been experiencing this past year I saw in this film. Earth is not a, you know, heaping pile of trash. It could very much become that if we don't take action. The government and, you know, by a larger extent, the world and other countries or other countries in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But really the humans being just literally, you know, motionless, just being dragged around in these robotic chairs, looking at screens, being fed meals in a milkshake, basically.
Oh my God.
It reminds me of what we've kind of gone through this past year of like everybody's just looking at a screen, whether it's for work, to talk to friends or family, watching shows or movies, looking at your phone to text people. I mean, we're just constantly going from screen to screen to screen, and COVID sort of exacerbates that because we're all forced into isolation, but I do think that's inevitable, or that was inevitable. And it's just kind of like, it's weird to say I'm scared watching that, but in a way I'm sort of, it's sort of affirming of like, yeah, like they kind of fucking knew back in 2008, like what was going to happen. And like, this is sort of our future is, you know, technology is basically the forefront, and we're consumed by it. I mean, we're talking through FaceTime right now, and we're on our computers recording this audio.
Yeah. It's a lot.
It's inescapable. That I found that aspect to be, as sort of startling, really important.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, you think this movie, to me, had relevance, like, back then. Mm-hmm. And it also has such relevance now. I mean, it's still the same, if not more so. You're right. Like, everyone kind of glued to their screens. And especially with being in lockdown, then we weren't even able to go anywhere. If you mm-hmm. were able to get outdoors, like, in a safe way, or if you were, like, not living in a city, I mean, you know, just walking around was, like, sort of a big deal. So that definitely hits home a different way now, you know, after this pandemic, for sure, versus when I watched it pre-pandemic. Yeah, it's the whole thing of also, like, I don't know if you saw that documentary about, I think it was on Netflix, about, you know, everyone being on their phones.
The Social Dilemma.
Yeah, but I stopped watching it after a certain point because it was so depressing. But basically, it was like, are we running our phones, or are our phones running us? Right. And then it's like, it knows when to, like, send you a notification, and, like, because the algorithm now doesn't do it when you get the notification, it does it, like, a little bit after, or, like, it knows. And then it, like, the people who've designed this to be addicting are also addicted to it. So it's, like, mm-hmm. crazy. And that reminded me of, like, you know, the captain, how he, or I know he didn't design the ship, but, like, the people, there was someone who, like, once upon a time in this movie, like, built this ship. And also, sidebar, I was very impressed. I was like, well, someone had to program all of this technology and think about, okay, right. Well, there's all the robots. But then everyone just, then they didn't need to think anymore. And then they just became blobs. So, yeah, that's definitely one of the major things for me. And yeah, I just agree, I guess, with your point and, like, how it is so relatable to now and, like, freaky, and, like, mm-hmm. it, like, some part of that could definitely be our future, and some part of that already is, and it's, like, so uncomfortable.
Yeah, but if I find myself, the older I get, being drawn to things that are more realistic, even if they're, you know, a fictional take or just a made-up story, that to me is something I'm more interested in nowadays. But I also, sort of on the other hand, appreciate about this film was how optimistic it is at the end of it, pretty much. You know, the message it sends is way more positive than I anticipated, but I should have, because it's Pixar. So yeah. I was so judgy as a, you know, moody 13-year-old thinking it's going to be this depressing film. And yeah, there are elements that are a little alarming and... you know, sort of hard to swallow. But at the end of the day, it is Pixar, and it is aimed at kids, and it's trying to send a good message, and I think it does. But I really appreciate their optimism.
Yeah.
But how much of that is, like, we can change things, and how much of that is we need to stick to our Pixar formula of keeping it upbeat. Right. I'm not really sure where the...
or what's more true... no, but yeah, I mean, it is positive at the end, and part of me, as not that I watched it as, like, a kid, but part of me, like, watching it as an adult, I go, oh, it's a great movie. It's a great kids movie. But at the end they sort of gloss over.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's, like, not the point of this story. But they sort of gloss over, like, we can just plant stuff. And I'm like, there's still, like, all of the mountains and building-sized mountains of trash. Yeah. That had needed to be cleaned up. And, like, the one, like, pan out where it's, like, all these fields of little sprouts, like, growing through, like, things in the dump. I'm like, actually, like, that's, like, unless it was, like, composted right or something. Like, there's tires in there. I'm like, if that was really how it would be, then there'd be like flowers in every dump in the country, or like in every dump ever. So you're like, I'm a little bit like, but that's just me. My being like cynical and being an adult and being like, well, actually, you know.
I agree, though. And I did find at the end, literally that scene you're talking about, nobody's wearing a mask. And maybe that, again, that's just me in COVID times. I'm like, the air quality must be so bad.
I know, like all of a sudden when the spaceship lands, it like, the sky is blue. And I'm like, no, like it's still dirty. Like,
it's still probably inhabitable. Like, yeah, inhabitable.
Inhospitable.
Inhabitable, I thought.
Yeah. Uninhabitable or like inhospitable?
Yes.
Sorry.
No. I always say inhabitable, which is not a word.
It should be. It sounds like a fun word. Well, also, I don't know if you do this in movies, but like if there's ever a scenario that's so like kind of beyond like a real life movie, I'm trying to think like this where it's like, okay, they live on this spaceship. And then, you know, the times change. It makes me wonder about all the like details that we're not getting to see. I'm like, what do their rooms look like? How do they procreate? Because there's all those children. And then so when they come out of the ship, I'm like, okay, like, but like they didn't just walk off the ship and like, cool. I'm like, did they like, who was the leader and who was like, let's like, okay, we're gonna like have to still live on the ship, but like while we like clean up, like did they live on the ship still? Like it's
did
all
they
these
quarantine?
Things. Where, yeah, it's like all these things where I'm like, okay, like actually, how would that happen in case it happens? But like, even if it does, it probably won't happen in our lifetimes, which is not the right attitude. But I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just like, someone needs to have a contingency plan for like when they get off the ship.
No, I agree. Also, again, it's a movie. It's a Pixar film.
Right.
But everybody is English speaking and American by default.
Right.
Like, where's the rest of the world on this ship too?
On a different ship? Are there other Axiom ships from other countries? Or like, did we like, are we the last people on Earth, which is highly scary? So I don't know that. Yeah. But of course, again,
right
movie, but yeah, it does make you wonder like, oh, and also what could have been even more interesting, I mean, maybe if this was a more adult film, I don't know, but you know, the idea of, by and large, that corporation that's taken over literally every aspect of our, you know, human life in the movie,
aka Amazon for us.
I was
now
literally gonna be like, basically Amazon. you know, they're providing gas, they're providing food, they're providing energy, building. The CEO is basically coming out looking like the president. I truly actually didn't even realize he was the CEO of By and Large.
Same.
Until this time watching it. I always thought it was the president.
I didn't realize it until the end when the captain is trying to, you know, deprogram Otto to go back to Earth, and he's getting that like secret, top secret message from the CEO, and that's when I saw the like title card that said,
I know
it.
I never picked up on that before, and I was like, oh, that, but just also creates a whole new spin on it.
Well, maybe that was intentional, of like, one day a CEO will be president.
I mean, people are already talking about Jeff Bezos like running for president. I'm like, do we need that? Well, why is that the best thing?
Didn't the Starbucks CEO try to run, or there were rumors he was going to run in 2020?
Oh, was it that guy? He actually wasn't one of the worst ones on the ticket, I have to say, for Democrats.
There were a gross amount of billionaires running and like CEOs running for president.
I feel like there was one guy that I'm thinking of who did have a lot of money, but he was very liberal. Like, he was very much like a Bernie type. I don't remember his name.
Not yet.
Sorry. Not Yang, who's running for
governor. Governor.
Mayor?
No, mayor. Mayor of New York City.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
And we didn't think we would get political on
this one. Sorry, you were talking about the By and Large guy.
Oh, no, you were. And okay. I just interjected that. Yeah, we didn't know he was the we thought he was the president, but he was the CEO.
Well, I guess that just, you know, makes me think, like, who's, you know, actually running things? And, like, and, oh, at what point, too, does, you know, the corporation sort of take over, like, human, like actual human need versus, like, what you're trying to sell people versus, like, mm-hmm. human want, I guess.
Yeah.
That wasn't really my point, but I'll probably get back around to it. Sorry.
Sort of piggybacking off of that point, I also was thinking of Elon Musk watching mm-hmm. this because, I mean, and it's not just him, but, you know, he's sort of been the most vocal about going to Mars and, you know, funding various, you know, expeditions out there. And I think talks openly about wanting to live there or, like, set up mm-hmm. life there, like human life. I can't stand the guy, so I
vaguely remember my point, though. I'm so sorry. So back to, like, where we were talking about how everyone on the ship is, like, is American. I mean, obviously it's the movie, but is American. What would have been even more interesting is if, you know, they did show, you didn't even need that many characters of it, or, you know, or like, you didn't need, like, 1,000 cast members speaking different languages, but there's so much going on the ship. All you needed was, like, a couple things, and even, like, maybe a scene or two of different regions of the ship in different languages. So you understand, oh, literally the entire human population is on right. this ship. And then that would have been even crazier because it was like, oh, this corporation is now not only taking over America, but, like, literally taking over the world, which it just makes it even scarier. I mean, it's like, yeah. how much scarier could it be? And yeah, I mean, if the CEO was, like, basically acting like the president, like, who's to say that, like, he wasn't practically, like, running everything? I mean, if they were so in control of everything in America, I mean, you'd think, like, they'd have some huge global presence as well. So it does make you think about those other, you know, people in other countries and, like, how, where is everyone else? Where has everyone else gone? You know?
Maybe Andrew Stanton, is that the director of this?
Yes.
Andrew Stanton with the other creators, makers of the film, discussed this and were like, okay, we can't take it that far because this is a kid's movie.
It's getting too crazy.
That is, like, too dark. But, like, it's also, I mean, yeah, this, you know, film is 13 years old. Like, now that doesn't seem that, it's scary as fuck, but it doesn't seem that outlandish.
Yeah.
Like, I hope that never happens because that truly sounds awful. But the way things are going, corporations like Amazon, Tesla, Facebook, Google, you name it, are getting more and more powerful.
Yeah.
And have their hands in politicians' pockets, have their hands in basically every major sector.
Right.
Sorry. I really didn't think I was, like, going to go
No,
here.
I mean, but this movie does, like, kind of touch on a lot of, like, heavier themes in terms of, you know, global sustainability and, yeah. you know, even if it's not climate change, it is a lot about, like, you know, human consumption and what we're doing with our waste and all of that. So, I mean, it's there. It's even if you're watching it as a kid, you know, we obviously you wouldn't be having this type of discussion about it, but it would sink in. And you know, that's why it's so crazy that, you know, even in 2008, like, this came out and they thought of this movie. I was reading that they thought about it back in 1994, but basically just the idea that, like, oh, what if everyone had to leave Earth and, like, there was one robot that they didn't turn off? But then it gets into this whole thing of, like, AI, which is, like, becoming weird when people talk about, oh, so crazy.
Well, right. It's, you know, to me, the robots that, you know, give you your drink, that, you know, change the channel for you on your screen, the robots that literally do everything for you besides make you breathe, because you do that on your own. That's, like, the only thing you can do on your own, it seems, in this film as a human. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of, you know, the Alexas, the Google Homes.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that. It reminds me of, well, again, speaking of Tesla, like the self, or no, that's not a self-driving car. Never mind.
Well, oh, did he make one though?
I have no idea. I just know they're the electric. They're like not gas powered.
I felt like cars. Part of it was, well, a lot of them have like self-parking now. You can like parallel park without touching the wheel. It's like,
maybe I should get a Tesla. Maybe. I take it back, Elon.
I just mean a lot of standard, you know, SUVs, crossovers right now come with a package where you can basically just parallel park itself, which is freaky. Yeah.
To our listeners, I can't drive, so.
Right, I forgot.
Yeah, a lot of the everyday appliances, you know, AI that's been built into our lives now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, literally, Siri is always listening to me, and sometimes I won't even say her name.
Right.
And she'll pop up and be like, sorry. And I'm like, I wasn't talking to you, and it's creepy. I don't like it.
You know, when you look at your phone after just having a conversation with somebody and you go to Google something, mm-hmm. and the first thing in the search is what you were just talking about?
Creepy.
Creepy as
creepy.
Fuck.
Creepy. Yeah.
Also, maybe I didn't realize it at the time, but maybe I also didn't want to watch this movie because I do have a fear of the robots taking over one day.
Yeah.
That is a fear of mine.
What is that? I know, like iRobot, or what's that one that will...
Oh, yeah, iRobot.
Is that's iRobot? Okay.
I think that's the plot of the film.
Is that iRobot or what's...
Are you thinking of I Am Legend?
I Am Legend, yes.
Those are like...
That's the one.
Vampire mutant humans.
Right. Well, that was because of a virus. True. Sorry. We're getting so like... Oh my God.
I'm really impressed with us. We're like... We're not going to have that much to talk about. And like, here we are.
I know. I was like, the movie's so quick. Well, it'll be quick. Let me like steer us back. Sorry, unless you had another point.
Just one other thing. And like, again, going back to, you know, Andrew Yang, he kept talking when he was running for president about how automation is killing jobs. And it basically is it's a growing industry. And that's kind of scary, but also something that I don't know if we can change that. And so we kind of have to adapt. And so like my point is just that the AI, for lack of a better term, that you see in that movie is, mm-hmm. you know, we have it now in our present day in many things.
Yeah. It's already here.
Right.
So.
It's yeah.
Yeah. It's a matter of time before they start, falling in love with the robot.
Oh my God.
Let me get us back a little bit.
Bring us just, back down to earth.
I'll bring us home. So do you want to do the Pixar rating now them. Or should we go on to other, I feel like let's do that now and then we can like go on to other themes and just other plot points in the movie.
So, should we do top five, top 10?
I don't know. Maybe top five and then we'll see.
Let's do top five. Let's start small and go bigger if we need.
Okay.
Favorite Pixar film of all time, hands down, Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
Second is Finding Nemo.
That is such a good one.
My third favorite is Toy Story 2.
Okay.
My fourth is Coco, and my fifth is Brave.
My number one is Cars. No, I'm kidding. there's so many. I'm looking up a list right now. Okay. I feel like my favorite is probably, and I haven't even seen it in a long time, it's probably Finding Nemo. I just think the writing in that is so funny.
Good.
I'm going to go with Toy Story 1.
Ours are literally reversed.
Monsters, Inc. What do I have? Two more?
Yes. That's three. your third.
Coco's really good.
So good.
It might be Coco, and then it's been a while since I've seen Inside Out, but it might be Coco and then The Incredibles.
Oh, fuck. That's such a good one. I know.
It's like there's so many. Oh, there's so many good ones. Okay, yeah. I stand by that list. Finding Nemo, Toy Story 1. What did I say next? Monsters Inc. Coco, then The Incredibles. One.
Solid.
The Incredibles 1.
I feel like our lists are pretty solid.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're all solid movies. Yes. But, like, I would be, like, surprised if one of us had, like, Cars on there.
Or, like,
we're, like, really shitting on Cars.
Ratatouille is good, but I didn't love it.
It is always good when I watch it, but it's not one of my...
Right. I don't think of it.
It's not one of my, oh, like, my heart doesn't, like, pang when I, like, think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Notice how Up is not on either one of our lists.
Well, I have yet to see the full movie. I've seen the first 10 minutes. Oh, my God. That's just, like, unavoidable in this day and age, but I haven't seen the full film.
I think the thing for me with Up is that with all the other Pixar films, especially the ones that I feel like are on both of our lists, are the worlds are so specific, and it felt like Up was a little bit vague for me, like a little, I know they're in the sky, so I'm going to say a little out there. I was just trying to get a grip of, like, what is this world and what is, like, the situation, you know? Sorry, I feel like I'm really taking us way off topic.
No, I just remembered, special shout out to, this gets honorable mention, A Bug's Life.
Oh, yeah.
Love wow. that movie.
That's a good one, too.
That might, like, that and or Brave, I would say, could be my fifth.
Mm. Yeah. Good ones.
Yes.
Okay, so I definitely want to talk about the sort of lack of dialogue, at least for pretty much the whole first half.
Mm.
Did that hit you at all, or were you, like, not even phased? I'm just curious.
I did notice it, but it didn't take away for me from the movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
I was very engrossed basically the whole time. I was thinking, though, while watching, this is another impressive feat by Pixar creators to make a kids movie that is basically dialogue free for the first hour. They've done a really great job of keeping the action and the storyline going at a pace that I think most kids would be engaged with and would hold their attention.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's not necessarily like action. It's
right.
It's just like, here's something and here's this little guy and like, what's he doing? And like, he's going over here. And it's really, it's really cute.
With his cockroach critter friend. I don't know what bug that was.
I think it was a cockroach because, first of all, the joke is that nothing is going to survive the end of the earth except for cockroaches and Twinkies.
Right.
And then he opens a Twinkie and the cockroach is living inside.
That was so gross.
It was so funny, though. And then great, like, leave it to Pixar to, like, make a cockroach cute.
Right. I know.
Like, I'm horrified by them by living in the city. And I found that little guy very cute.
Yeah, the cockroach. Do you watch Russian Doll?
No. I should.
Oh, my gosh. Watch that show. But the main character in that says cockroach. The cockroach is simultaneously cute and gross. I'm, like, endeared by it, but also somewhat revolted by it.
Yeah, well, I didn't like when it was crawling all over. I was like, yeek.
Yeah. Way to humanize a bug, a pest.
I know. So cute. So that didn't bother you at all. Cool.
No, and yeah, if anything, I was really impressed by it.
Yeah. Same.
But I was surprised to... I knew Wally was, you know, that's how the character says their name, but I didn't realize there was going to be as much dialogue between Wally and Eve.
Yeah, it's kind of impressive.
Like, they say... maybe like 10 words total to one another or like ever in the film, but that was 10 more than I expected. So
I, I wonder even what, do you mean like 10 separate actual words or like 10 times they're like, okay.
Wally, Eve, descriptor.
Or directive.
Directive.
Yeah. Oh, Earth. She says, who are you? When she like points the gun at him, which is like so funny.
I probably missed that.
But it really, I don't think I noticed it the first time, but I think that's what's implied that she's saying, but it literally sounds like, I'm not going to do it well, but it literally sounds like, it's like,
you're right. When the dust storm comes through and Wally's like, look behind you, and she doesn't because she's asking him. You're right. It's now coming back to me. But yeah, it's not clear. And I know it's meant to be muffled and not clear to us. But yeah, she does say that. That's another thing too. I don't know how much we need to really discuss it, but they've gendered these robots.
They did.
Wally is a male as we understand, and Eve is a female as we understand. And I think that's also too because they see themselves in that musical that keeps getting referenced. Which
that's true.
I have another question: what musical is that?
I looked it up because I never knew until I did research for the podcast. So I've never seen this movie. It's Hello, Dolly. And I think the song in the beginning where it starts with the shots from space and it's like out there.
I really liked that.
That was such a good song.
That was a great opening.
So now I really feel like I have to watch Hello, Dolly. That song, and then I guess one scene in Hello Dolly is that love song that they keep showing, and kind of it's almost like teaching them about love and teaching Wally about love, which I definitely the last sort of main thing I wanted to bring up and talk about was just how they sort of had their whole relationship unfold and how they could like show affection between these robots. I mean, the way that they animated Wally is so well done, and it reminded me a lot of the stuff that we talked about with like BB-8. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this is even like leveled up, honestly.
I do too, actually. Yeah, I think he's more humanized.
Yeah. And I forget when or even what documentary this was, but I like watching a lot of the like making of or like behind Pixar or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there was one like thing I was over the years I saw about how they were making the challenge of making Wally human like, and they were talking about how, okay, they settled on this sort of binocular-y looking thing for his eyes, but they added like layers of lenses so that it looked like his pupils were like looking dilated. Around and moving. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, that is so cool. Wow. Yeah, really. And so that he didn't look flat or like dead eyed. What did you say? Doll's eyes.
Doll's eyes. Lifeless eyes. Okay, last reference to Godfather.
Yeah, sorry guys. Sorry.
The eye work in this movie by Wally is comparable to Al Pacino in The Godfather Part 2.
Yes.
You heard it here first. No, I do think that is really what, as an audience viewer, makes you feel for Eve and Wally and these other robots is like their eyes, what they're seeing through, whether they're digital, just blue blobs or, yeah, these lenses. That to me is really what makes them human-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't think we touched on, but just getting back to also the maybe intentional, but or maybe I assume it was intentional gendering of the robots, that Wally is not only masculine, but you know what kind of, if he was a guy,
yeah,
you know what kind of guy he is. Yep. He's sort of like this weird little clunky little, like, you know, thing kind of putzing around, and like Eve is literally like ethereal. She's like floating. Mm-hmm. she's streamlined, and it's just so funny the way they animated both of them and both of them together. Curved. Yeah, she's got curves. I just loved it.
Is a strong female robot.
Yes.
It was kind of cool though to see them do a take on, you know, air quotes around this, you know, strong independent female meets bumbling dweeb male. Because we've definitely seen that in rom-coms.
Yeah, this had a lot of rom-com-y aspects to it. Like the whole montage, I was like laughing out loud, and I've seen this before, of like him like kind of following her around, and he's like in the supermarket and like runs up the stairs and then, or like rolls himself up the stairs. And then like this, he like crashes into the carts and then he's like, wah! And then like, oh.
I laughed out loud too.
It's just so great the way that they paint. And she's like, I don't know, but they do so much with seemingly so little. Like they're not saying a lot, obviously, but it's even just the little motions, even her like the timing of like when she looks away, or I don't know, it's great.
What we're just talking about reminds me of, yes, this is an animated film, but the physical comedy is great. Like that scene with those two humans, I don't even remember their names now. When everyone's
Mary and John,
when the ship is like basically turning over and everyone's falling down.
Yeah.
You don't know how to stand yet. She catches him and she's like, get ready, John, to like have some kids. And just all these babies come sliding down.
I know, they were very like quick to connect.
Yes. But things like that. Wally in the supermarket. Even Wally just trying to like dig himself into a hole to protect himself. Things like that I just found really funny, and it worked.
Yeah, it was such a real, quote, real reaction, even though humans like couldn't do that for themselves. But like real in terms of like the space around them, and it all made sense. So yeah, a lot of the physical, and also one thing that I thought they did with the physical comedy that was so great is the one scene where he's like teaching her how to like dance, or he's showing her, and then she tries to jump, and like, and then you go, oh my God, she's really heavy. Like it's just like something that they thought about, like, oh, how much does she actually weigh without this like force field of floatiness around, or whatever it is. Just really smart.
Well, and speaking of kind of like weight differentials, at the end when she's holding Wally and he's like clearly like busted or bruised, down for the count in a sense, I found it cute but also kind of funny just how she's holding him. Like, I don't know.
Like a little baby.
To me that kind of added to like this really great sense of awareness within this animated world of like weight and presence and contact
that
these people and robots have with one another.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing, like adding the physical comedy but also like just having, it sounds weird, but like having the animated characters like touch and interact as much adds a lot, and obviously doing it well is fantastic. You know, this is why Pixar is the way they are, and why they're so successful. Because there's definitely, I'm kind of drawing a blank, but I feel like there are some animated films, maybe mostly 2D ones sometimes, where they come up short of like, it does seem flat and they're lacking sort of any like real weight dimension or space or, you know, dimension. And the characters aren't sort of interacting in that way. It just seems very like, I know it's 2D, but
flat.
But there are 2D, I'm trying to think of ones. I guess I just think of like certain old Disney cartoons where it almost seems like, you know, the character is like popping out of the background, like nothing's like integrated, and you're kind of like losing the sense of space. I mean, I feel like it was sort of an old style of animation too, where like they used to kind of color in the you know, characters in solids, and then they used to like watercolor the backgrounds, so it didn't really look like anyone was standing anywhere. So I don't know, obviously this isn't the first Pixar film to come out like this, but over the years, like, this has obviously developed like a huge just added bonus for the world of animation, I guess.
Sorry, I don't know. I don't know if I have much to add.
I keep derailing your thoughts.
No. That's really interesting. And you know more about this than I do. I feel like just with your background in, I was going to say art direction. I mean, yes, that, but like having an eye for like the visual of knowing measurements and dimensions and colors.
I don't know the measurements, but
you, yeah, you know how to sew and make your own clothing. So to me, that means.
I mean, I can't remember the last thing I sewed, but. I think it was a Halloween costume.
Well, it's very possible, even though, again, I hope it doesn't happen, that people could just be fat blobs on a spaceship if Earth becomes inhospitable. I do think it could also be that everybody becomes addicted to virtual workout machines like Pelotons and Hydros and Nordic Tracks. And so everyone's just super fit and you know, muscular and constantly working out because you can go for a marathon run in the comfort of your own little cubicle. What am I trying to say?
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. I would love to be addicted to working out.
To me, that's sort of like an extreme, like a 180 from what the movie depicts. But, you know, I find it hard to believe that if we were all forced onto a spaceship, some habits are going to die hard. Some people are going to still find ways to just constantly work out and maintain their form and aren't just going to let everything go to shit, their bodies included.
Yeah.
That might be like the one thing they're like, our Earth is gone, but my body is still mine and I want to keep it, you know, looking good in my Lululemon leggings.
Yeah. Well, I think it with the people getting like blobby, I think it was partially that they were all so like engrossed and almost hypnotized by their screens and everything that by and large was like putting in front of them, so that they like couldn't really even get out of it. Like, you know, John and Mary could only get out of it because like they literally were knocked out of their chairs, or like Wally like disengaged her like headset thing. And she, I love the line of like, well, I didn't know we had a pool. Like, it's so funny. Or like, they actually said like, oh, we have a jogging track. Like, someone said that at one point. And I was like, would you use it? Like, I don't know. But so there's that, like that they're, you know, kind of hypnotized by the screens. But there was also the factor of, which I didn't look up, so sorry, I might not get the like exact details of this right. But they're basically in space. And obviously they have like some kind of gravity force on the ship. But when you're in space in like some sort of semi-weightless place, your muscles will like atrophy, which is why like when astronauts go to the space station for a certain amount of time, they have to like, they actually have to do workouts every day, because otherwise it's not really to like bulk. It's like literally to like to keep their muscle mass from like, cause otherwise they'll just like collapse if they were to like go back to Earth, cause they weren't like walking or something, like, which
maintain
is crazy.
Those gains.
So I think it's like a little bit of both. And then also combined with the fact that they have been on the ship for like 700 plus years or something, so like, let's say we would be the first generation to like be on the ship, maybe there would be like, okay, like some people would be really into the working out and everything, but like maybe over time, I mean, this is like a negative way to think about it, but like maybe over time, like, you know, less and less people would want to be doing that because of the ease and convenience. And because also that autopilot guy clearly has like taken over. So he doesn't want any humans to have independent thought.
I was thinking, oh, this, you know, Otto reminds me a lot of Hal from 2001 A Space Odyssey. And then I've never seen that. Very clear. Oh my God.
I know.
I just say, oh my God, not because, yes, you should see it, but like that is
a classic.
It's a classic, but it's a hard fucking movie.
Oh, okay.
To watch. And I mean that from like a conceptual, I still can't make sense of it.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And I've seen it at least twice.
Okay.
It's.
I can't wait to do a deep dive on it.
I'm down to go there with you on this pod with that. But yeah, that's a hard movie, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, Otto is a Hal and, you know, the name's escaping me, but they're clearly drawing reference to that.
Mm-hmm. Were you going to say Big Brother? That was also a...
No, Otto is Hal and the captain is... not directly, but similarly in a position of I'm at your mercy because you have been programmed to operate this ship and you're overriding my orders is the position that one of the astronauts in 2001 A Space Odyssey in that famous open the pod bay doors, Hal. That's the kind of direct reference they're making with that scene.
Interesting.
I just can't remember that the character's name right now.
Okay.
But I appreciated that as like a, you know, I do like that movie and, you know, I feel like Pixar does that. They sort of like to wink, wink, nod, nod to like other classic films or just like well-known, other well-known pieces of cinema.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably for the parents who are inevitably bringing their kids to see this film. So they get a little bit of like entertainment that way too. And also going back to the, you know, muscle... Mm-hmm. Changes if you're out in space. I didn't know. I don't think you looked. Did you say that you didn't look this up? I'm just curious if you do know though. So do you actually lose bone mass when you're out in space? I mean, maybe they're making this prediction that like after 700 years, human bones will just deteriorate, which is kind of scary too to think about.
Yeah.
So like you're kind of at, you kind of can't help but just become a blob because you're literally living in outer space.
I am looking up the effects of microgravity on, it says musculoskeletal effects and cardiovascular effects. So they weren't like pulling that out of a vacuum. That is obviously from somewhere, again, with like the people exercising at the space station. I thought that was mostly due to prevent, you know, muscle loss. But, okay, I'm reading that it also apparently, living in a microgravity environment leads to increased bone resorption, which I guess is like decreased. It says decreased bone mineral density and increases fracture risks and da da da. So, yeah, Miles, it's crazy. Sorry.
I love it. Every time we record, he's got an opinion.
I know. He's really he's like our studio audience.
He's like our third host.
It doesn't give the whole article is pretty long, but it says that in the first 2 weeks, if you don't keep up exercises, the muscles will start like the process of atrophy if like they haven't been like carrying any weight, basically. So, yeah, but I don't know about the exact, like, time frame of when it... Oh, yeah, I don't know when your bones would start to resorb.
But that sounds kind of painful, but...
Yeah, but
if it's happening over time, yeah, you probably won't feel it.
And, like, it's, like, a weird, like... I mean, I'm assuming in the movie they are... You know, with the pictures of the captains, it seemed to be like every generation is a little bit more less
of a blob.
Of a blob.
Operation Recolonize?
Yeah.
Interesting word choice.
Why do you think so?
Kind of going back to what we talked about before, we don't have any perception. We can assume or we cannot that the entire world has been evacuated.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of this and what we've now discussed is a corporation going back to Earth to recolonize it, to me kind of has, it has negative implications. It doesn't read well. It's a Pixar film. I don't know how much they were like really trying to say anything more than that.
Right. But I think it's a good point to bring up for sure.
Last thing I'll say is it just like from a historical standpoint, you know, North America was colonized.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this sense, it's sort of like the colonization of North America and other places in the world was like a first time we're entering this area and making it our own, even though there are people here that have made their own way of life previous to us coming. So
I really actually think it's a good, just interesting thing to bring up. I didn't think of it in terms of like the corporation coming back, just because I think to me, with the like shutting off of Otto and the captain's realization of like, okay, like let's get back. I felt like the sort of by and large whole system was kind of disbanded in that moment when Otto was shut down. So I didn't necessarily see it as like the corporation coming back. But I do think that like, yeah, the recolonizing is it, I guess I'm not really sure what other way they would say it, but like, yeah, they're like coming back home. And, you know, it's weird, like you were mentioning before, like how Elon Musk is talking about, you know, living on Mars, and they're talking about like these, you know, colonizing other planets. So when you think about that, it does get a little like dicey in terms of like, we know from history, like what's happened to populations that have been colonized or who have had colonizers take it over. So I don't know. I don't know. You're right. I don't know if there's like a kind of crux to the point. It was just like an interesting observation, but I think it's a good one.
Maybe like a recolonization of like an ecosystem of, because like there's no living persons on Earth anymore, like in this movie. Yeah, I don't know. To me, I would call it like return, Operation Return.
Yeah, I think the colonizing, it just has like a negative connotation.
Maybe I don't really understand the term colonization. Well, but to me, that's not the best term for the actual mission they're on.
I think I would agree with that. I kind of had like a thought while you were saying all of that. Like, it's because colonization has like a negative connotation.
And you associate it with people taking over other
exactly,
people.
Exactly, yes. It's about like, I don't know if we had ever, like in the history of the world, literally colonized somewhere that didn't already have people there. So the idea that they're like recolonizing seems weird. And I guess, again, it's just the negative, all that comes with that, because it seems like then you're getting rid of whatever people or populations are there. So yeah,
or culture,
I agree.
Yeah.
They could have like maybe come up with a better name. Yeah. Yeah. I guess just to like broaden it again. So obviously we touched on a lot of like the major sort of, I guess, heavier themes in the movie. And there are some lighter themes too, but like, what do you think are the, I guess, few major themes of this movie or like lessons that kids maybe would take away from this movie, or even adults, but you know.
Lessons that kids would take away or adults from this film. Treat the earth better.
That's a great lesson, yes.
Don't use single-use plastics if you can help it. Robots have feelings, and they too deserve to find love.
It's like, I want to be like, oh, but then I go, oh my God, no, then they'll take over.
No. Yeah, exactly.
They're not going to be like Wally and Eve.
Robots are not your friends. Again, I think technology is unavoidable. Be careful how you use it and try not to let it consume you and drive you and be what makes you do things or not do things. I mean, that's like a whole nother point of like access to technology that we're like, that some people in the world just don't have access to technology. And like, that's a negative for the most part, not really a positive.
Yeah.
Like, I think us in the Western world, it's like, oh, like too much social media. I need to like take a break from this app, or like I look at my phone too much, which is, you know, legitimate, and like people need their space from that. But on the other hand, it's like some people just don't even have internet.
Yeah.
They live in such a remote, poor area that they can't access that at all. They don't have a computer. They've never used one before. They don't have a phone. But if, you know, technology, which I'm sure it will, for better or for worse, evolve and become more accessible, I think that's an important message from this film, at least that I've taken, is that, yeah, technology is very powerful, and to be careful with how, you know, it affects your life and how you use it, if it's in your life.
Mm-hmm. Just one, it's not really about the earth, but I guess more society today. Just like be careful of the like huge corporate sort of monopolies, I'd say.
Yes.
And having one thing be in all facets probably is not a recipe for longevity and success. It might be short-term success, but I don't know. That's just me.
No, but I completely agree.
If I were to add to that theme list.
And not that learning about space and our solar system and what is out there in this galaxy and other galaxies far, far away, that is important, and we should keep studying those things and, you know, pushing forward space travel. And by that, I mean through like NASA, not through fucking Elon Musk's SpaceX, whatever. I think all of that's important, but I also think too, we all still live on this planet, and we need to take, in my opinion, more action now to keep it going and to try again to either prevent future catastrophes, natural disasters, because things are only going to get worse.
Yeah.
Everywhere, not just in certain parts of the world. It's going to affect everybody everywhere. To me, this movie sort of is like a warning. It's that could be what Earth is, or that could be what Earth ends up being. And so we do need to take action.
No, but I agree. And to, I guess, you know, add again to that, I was watching something recently, a very depressing documentary, but
what documentary was it?
That I'm Greta. New one, Seaspiracy, on Netflix. I was kind of watching it in between editing our last episode. It was on when, like, I was in the living room and my stepdad and David were watching it. And so I would, like, hear some of it, and then I got, like, sucked in. And it's very upsetting a little bit. But basically at the end, there's sort of a lesson that I think kind of relates to this movie. And it's basically that, I'm going to say it a little differently in this context, but it's that the Earth right now, think of the Earth as like a ship that you're on way out at sea, or even like a spacecraft that you're on and you're like light years from home. And you know, the Earth and everyone on it are the crew, and all the plants and all the animals are also like part of the crew and like things that are built into the ship. So if we, you know, start sort of disrespecting or killing off like parts of the crew and departments and things like that, like no one's gonna be left to run the ship. And so I think like that a little bit ties in here, just in terms of the captain sort of has this revelation about, oh, it just needs someone to take care of it. The planet needs someone to take care of it, and we have to go back to take care of it. Because no one's there taking care of it, and that's our job as people who live here. So that's how I just thought it connected. We're all like members of the crew who like need to maintain the ship.
That's a great metaphor.
Not my own brainchild, by the way. I don't remember the name of the guy who said it, but if you watch the documentary Seaspiracy on Netflix, you will find that guy's name. Just, I have to give credit where credit is due, but I don't remember his name. I'm sorry.
That guy. Well, and I don't know if we mentioned this already, but too, corporations own complicity and involvement in actively destroying our planet and our environment.
Oh, yeah. Corporations are like the biggest industry. Yeah. But I think those are all, good and important lessons. Yeah.
We only have one planet. We need to treat it better. We need to take action to try to stop climate change. I mean, some people say that we're past the point. We still need to take action, though, regardless of what the future holds. Because if we don't do anything, it's going to end up being what you see in the movie.
Or something like that. Nobody wants that. Yeah.
And whether or not, you know, you might live through that in your lifetime, it's not fair to future generations, which is why people like Greta Thunberg, I hope I'm saying her name right, I think she's such an inspiration because, you know, it's her generation and future generations that are going to have to deal with the consequences of a planet that's not in good shape because of the destruction and damage that corporations, governments, and people have done to it. Mm-hmm. So we need to be more careful, and robots are not your friends.
Except for Wall-E. No. I know it's weird to end that episode this episode on that note. But
that's what I hope people take from this movie.
There are a lot of big sort of themes again and lessons here. But if for those who haven't seen it by now, I'm surprised that you made it through this episode. But if you hadn't or would encourage someone else to, I encourage you to tell them to watch it. Wall-E's a super fun movie if you know any kids or if you're babysitting or have kids. Obviously, I would say it's a great kids movie despite all the kind of heavier things we were talking about. Mm-hmm. They tend to keep it light in the movie, and it's a really good, just a really also cute, you know, again, love story and kind of hopeful way to think about how we can, you know, move forward if things were to ever become drastic in terms of our waste or climate change or anything like that. So it's an overall positive film.
Yeah, this is not an Inconvenient Truth.
Right.
Yes, no, I agree with that completely. I really liked this movie again. I would definitely recommend our listeners watch it if you haven't. It's Pixar. It's going to be a good time. I didn't cry, actually. I was surprised I didn't cry.
Oh, I don't know if
I got a little.
Oh, you did. I don't know if I've ever cried during Wall-E, but what scene?
I got a little verklempt when Wall-E is presumed dead, presumed defective. Aww. And Eve is trying to, you know, wake him up and sort of have her her realization that he might not be the same Wall-E that she.
Oh, and she's like putting him back together. That's really cute. Yeah. Yeah.
Got me a little emotional.
Oh, yeah. What's Pixar without almost making you cry, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean.
I cried 3 times watching Toy Story
3. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I need to watch that one again. That is a great one.
That's a really good one. All right. So that concludes our TED Talk on why we need to take action on climate change. No, that concludes our discussion on Wall-E. And next time for our season 2 finale, we're gonna be talking about Hustlers and why Haley hasn't seen that.
I know, it's a little crazy because I'm all for girl power.
Girl power.
We're, again, swinging the other way, switching gears. We really have just, we threw everything on the board this season. We were like all over the place. We kind of just wanted to end with like, we started with Wonder Woman and now mm-hmm. we're ending with very different, but another sort of, in a way, obviously I haven't seen it, but from what I know, another sort of girl power movie, if you will, from what little I know about it, truly. So that's what we decided on, and I'm really excited to watch it.
I can't wait. I love this movie so much. It's such a good time.
Ready to have a good time.
Exactly.
So thank you guys so much for listening. Again, please follow us on Instagram at SeenThatPod. You can keep listening to us on Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. And please follow us on those platforms as well, so you get notified every time there's a new Seen That episode. I'm looking forward to our last episode. I can't believe it. But, you know, we'll be back before too long. So remember, we are still all in this together. There's light at the end of the tunnel. Stay safe. Keep wearing your masks. Get vaccinated if you can. We love you. And I love Avril.
I love you all. I love you, Haley. I love you, Miles. until next time, everybody. Bye.
Bye, guys. See you for our final episode. Woo!
Remember me.